Hello and welcome to another episode of Tank Nuts. It is my great pleasure today to introduce a man who is the director of the Swedish Tank Museum, Arsenalen, and also a former company tank commander. It's Mr. Stefan Carlson. Hi, Stefan. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
How's life treating you?
Well, it could be worse.
It's. I imagine you've, like a lot of the museums, the past 12 months or so have been pretty painful, to say the very least.
Yes, it has been a different year, so to speak. Nothing that we could ever imagine that this would happen. So, well, it's been challenging in many cases, It's different.
Have you been in the horrible position where you've had to lay off any staff or anything, or is it very similar to the sort of furlough scheme that we had in the UK?
It's pretty similar to the furlough scheme. So we have been lucky to be able to keep the staff, and we have been reducing the amount of time they're working, and so far we have been lucky, but it has been pretty much work to try to find out ways to handle this and to apply for more money and to keep up with everything that's happening.
So let's start at the very beginning then, Stefan. Before we get to questions about the museum and to discussing the museum, you are obviously ex-Swedish Army.
Yes.
Former tank company commander. What was the first vehicle that you started off in? I know the answer to this, but and it makes you sound really old.
Yes, the first vehicle to start off with as in the army was the Centurion Mark 10. And that was in 1984, and I guess that you were on the chieftain.
It's funny you say that, because I joined the army in 1983, so we're sort of about the same age anyway. But obviously, yeah, at that stage we had chieftain, just about had chieftain. So the Centurion, Stefan. I mean, obviously, I've actually driven one at one stage, and it's such a change to the later vehicle. We'll get onto that later on. But I mean, how was it training on a Centurion?
Well, since I didn't know much about anything else. I didn't have much to compare with, but it was interesting, and it was a bit challenging with, especially the driving, since it's a manual gearbox and no synchronization, so it's a crash box. But I was used to that from previously, so I could handle it. But there were a lot of people that they couldn't cope whatsoever. It was totally impossible to drive it. So it's a challenging tank. And when you look back then in 1984, it was a really old tank. And we thought this is the future.
How did you, what was the, why the armed forces then? What, for you as a young man, what was the drive towards going in the army?
Well, that began a long time ago when I was a kid. Back home in my hometown, there was an infantry regiment, and I was interested in the military for, I don't know why, but for some reason. And once every year, they had a visit from an armored regiment. And all of a sudden, I was there out in the woods, looking at these tanks from behind a tree, and these guys, they saw this little kid standing over there, so they invited me and showed me the tanks, and they were very friendly. So I think that might be some sort of a starting point, that I had this goal. They took care of me. They put me into the tank, and very friendly guys. So I think that must have been one reason.
I mean, you actually, is it the same structure as for the British Army? So to go in as an officer, you had to have a certain amount of, you know, educational qualifications and all
yes,
that.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And because of that I did my school anyway, and I was, well, I had this aim to become an officer, even if I did my technical training as an engineer, just to be able to have some sort of a background to rely on. And then in Sweden at the time, we all had to do the military service. So it's, there was no option. The only option was, would I like to carry on and become an officer, or just do my service? And I wanted to carry on, so I applied for that.
Oh, so you did your, it was like conscription, I assume it is.
Yes.
You did that for, how long's that?
Depends on the type of training you have. It was from 7.5 months up to 15 months, depending on if you were an ordinary soldier or some kind of tank commander or whatever.
Sort of specialist training or something.
Yeah. Specialist also.
And so you decided to stay on. You obviously loved it that much. What are your thoughts when you first came across Centurion then? I mean, was the training the same as for us? Obviously, eventually you came up to be a commander, then, you know, company commander, even at the end of all that. But do you have to learn every single trade of the vehicle to start with?
Yes, it was real fun, and I really liked it. And I don't think that it was some part of it that I didn't like. I really enjoyed doing all these bits, and I later on, I didn't know at the time, but later on I realized that I was really interested into the technology of everything. Some of my colleagues, they were more into tactics and wanted to be a battalion or brigade commanders. But I was interested, how does it work? How to fix it?
Now, when we talk about the Centurion, Stefan, I mean, obviously you were a commander of a Centurion. Now, if we go on to, at what stage did you get when we talk about Sweden, of course, and tank warfare, everybody automatically thinks of the S-Tank. At what stage did you actually get the S-Tank then in the unit?
We got the first S-Tanks in mid-1960s in Sweden, and they were used up until 1995 approximately, when we changed into Leopard 2. So during my time, we had both Centurion and the S-Tanks parallel.
So you actually served on the S-Tank as well then, before going to the Leopard 2?
Not very much. Bits of my training, but not very much, since they were in different regiments. My training on real training on the S-Tank came later on.
When we talk about the change from a Centurion to the S-Tank, I mean, for me, it was obviously the change from Chieftain to Challenger 1. Now, there was a lot of change as far as the technology was concerned, but fundamentally, you know, it was a similar to many degrees vehicle. You know, it looked similar. But I mean, there was such a difference between the Centurion and the S-Tank. I mean, you couldn't get two more vastly different vehicles, really.
In some aspects, it's very different, and it from the beginning, it depends on who you ask and who you listen to. There's so much argument if people hate it or love it, and if you consider it as a defensive tank, it's a lot different from Centurion, which has a turret. But in many cases, and that might be one of the explanations why people are so mad about this tank or angry about it, that they were used as a main battle tank in the same way as a turreted tank. And since you couldn't attack in the same way as with a turret tanks where you can fire on the move in a much better way. It wasn't possible to use it to similar tactics, but in some cases they were used in the same way, and in some cases they were used totally different. So it depends on how you look into the doctrine and how they were actually used. And a lot of people say it's not a tank. Well, it is, because it was designed and it was used as a tank. It doesn't look like ordinary people think is a tank.
I have to, but surely as a crew, because you went from a Centurion crew. So I mean, the S-Tank's got three-man crew, isn't it? Which is quite unusual, yes. Anyway. And you've also got the, I always remember, it was a few years ago, you were kind enough to let me have a drive in the S-Tank at your museum. And I have to say, great vehicle to drive, but I found it really difficult to get used to in the first place. I mean, obviously, being British, we're used to the tillers for driving anyway. So straight away there, you've got this, I don't know what you call it, it's like a joystick, sort of like hand wheel or something, isn't it?
It's like a motorcycle handle.
And I always found the problem was that if you pushed forward, of course, the whole nose of the vehicle would dip down and everything. So a fun vehicle. But as a crew, it must have been quite difficult to transition from the Centurion crew. I mean, there must have been a lot of different things. I mean, even, I don't know, going to hides at night, setting up, the sleeping arrangements and all the rest of it. There must have been a lot of changes there.
Yeah, for the crews, there were no changes at all since we had the conscripts army. So the crews, they were trained on Centurion tanks. They remained on Centurion tanks all the time.
Yeah.
And the difficulties was for the officers that were used to one vehicle and then changed onto another vehicle. And that could be a bit challenging. But for the crew members, well, they had nothing to compare to. So for them, no problem at all. But for the officers, of course, there would be a lot of if you change into another system. And in some cases, they found, well, this is fantastic vehicle. We can do this and this. And for other people, well, hate it. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah. And so following the S-Tank, did you serve on the Leopard 2 or you'd left by then?
Leopard 2, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
you did
yes,
serve on the Leopard. I mean, that is, again, so you've gone from Centurion S-Tank to, I mean, arguably, certainly one of my, I think one of the best, you know, tanks in the entire world, to be perfectly honest. How did you find the Leopard 2?
Well, it was a fantastic vehicle. I was lucky enough to be a part of the first test crew in 1989, and then I went from Centurion to Leopard 2, and it's like a spaceship. If you compare it. And then after that, I went back to Centurion again. And, well, people couldn't understand. How can you go from a spaceship back to a stone hammer and a sword? Well, you have to accept it. It's the way it is. But then later on in 1995, we changed into Leopard 2, and that was a very big lift. And I don't think that we until then realized how bad suited we were with the Centurion tanks. They were so far behind compared to Leopard 2, M1A1, etc.
Yeah, because I was involved in the trials when we were looking at transitioning from Challenger 1 to Challenger 2. I was involved in the trials gunnery-wise. I was a gunnery man. So the trials from, because we tested M1A2, Leopard 2, Leclerc. What was the other vehicle? Can't remember now. But I think that was it. But for us, I have to say, from the gunnery side, we all went for Leopard 2. We thought Leopard 2 was, and of course, Challenger 2 was, we were trialing as well. But we all went for Leopard 2. We just thought it was such a lovely vehicle. And I think what our crews loved about it was, you know, when you serve in an armored vehicle and you get that feeling that it's reliable, it's sort of trustworthy, and it's going to do the job it's designed for. As opposed to Chieftain, which would just break down all the time and everything. But we felt it was such a fantastic vehicle. How did you find it on the live firing periods, range periods, and that sort of
thing? Well, it was absolutely fantastic, and it just carry on. It went just, you could just drive it and fire and fire, and it never broke down. And it was it was such a big change from the Centurion, where you all had all difficulties and the S tank that all of a sudden it just broke down, and this was just, it just went on. And it's like an ordinary modern car that you can drive for miles and miles and miles, no problem at all. And it was absolutely amazing. And I agree with you. It, you felt secured in it. It's very reliable vehicle. Fantastic tank.
So moving on a bit, and fast forwarding, it was time for you. So how many years did you end up serving in the Swedish Army for then?
In total, more than 20. Then I was still active officer, even if I worked for the Army Museum for a few years. About 20 years. First as an ordinary officer, and then I switched over to become a technical officer. My brigadier realized that my interest for technical things was a bit more than for the tactical stuff, so he persuaded me to change, and it was a great opportunity.
Oh, so I didn't realize. So you were still serving soldier when you went in as the director of the museum, the tank museum.
Yes, I was. But I was on leave, so to speak, and then they asked me, maybe every year, they go, will you come back? Well, maybe not yet, but maybe in the future. And then all of a sudden, they said, you have to decide, will you come back or not? No. So I had to resign.
You had to resign, and then you took up sort of permanent position as the director of the museum.
Yeah.
And let's talk a bit about the museum then. For those that haven't been lucky enough to go there, I mean, we've visited it probably a half dozen times, I suppose, over the last few years. And I have to say, it is absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's where was it positioned? It's about I was trying to think where it was from, sort of Stockholm way, and that's about an hour's drive or maybe more.
Yeah, it's about 1 hour drive from west of Stockholm, in Strängnäs.
Absolutely beautiful. And how would you describe the museum, Stefan, to somebody who's never visited? Give me your sales pitch for the museum.
Well, if you compare to many other tank museums in the world, it's different, because we have left out a lot of vehicles that we realized they will not suit in the museum. They don't have anything to add to the collection. So we have used a lot more space around the vehicles instead of having them stacked just one side by side in a very cramped area. So for some people, they really love it, because you can stand and watch the vehicles from different angles and you can take pictures of them. But for other people, well, we don't have the second and the third Sherman. We only have one in the museum. We don't have another. We have a few examples of everything that will be able to understand the history from the beginning of the first tank up till modern day. So it's a museum more for the general public than actually for the really tank nerds at the moment. But we are planning for an expansion, so we will be able to show even the rest that we have in storage.
Oh, fantastic. You mentioned storage there. You were kind enough to show us around storage at one point. I have to say, some of the things, I'm not even sure, there's some stuff we're not even allowed to mention, I think, in there, but some of the things that you had in storage were absolutely incredible.
Yes, there are a few interesting bits and pieces. It is, and that's also one of the opportunities that we have, that we have been able to change. So it's not always the same vehicles in museum. So all of a sudden there is another one, and people asking where it's gone, it's off for a few months, and now it's this instead. So we're changing the exhibition constantly.
What did you find as a former soldier then for the sort of like vast majority of your adult life? You suddenly became this director of a museum. I mean, I would imagine the transition from going to, I don't know, it's somewhat business orientated, I would assume, running the museum. What was the most difficult thing for you, really?
Well, it wasn't what I expected, but I didn't understand that from the beginning. And I talked to my friend David William Bovington many years ago, and he said that 95% of the job is things that you don't want to do, and 5% is the things that you would like to do, and it's true. It's running an ordinary business with budget planning, staff issues, etc. So it's not that glamorous that people would think it is. But on the other hand, I have the opportunity to go out there and grab any vehicle, and I could climb into it when the museum is closed. So it's a great job, even if most of the time is just to run the business.
I always got the impression, because every time I met you, it was you were always dressed in your sort of like coveralls and work clothes, covered in a bit of oil and messing around with some vehicle somewhere in the museum. So I always got the impression that you much preferred the hands-on approach as opposed to sitting in the office.
Yes, I do. And I have been told by my lovely staff that they have bought me some new clothes to be able to look a bit more proper and tell me when to shave, etc.
Is the museum then? Is it? I mean, it's not entirely private. It's owned by the armed forces, is it? Or
no, it's a privately owned museum. Okay. But the collection belongs to the government. So we have the task to show the people the collection, but we have to find the money to do it, and that's one of the big issues that we have. We are depending on the visitors.
So is that what you rely on completely for running the museum, is in the main the number of people through the door?
Yes, and that's why it's so difficult this year, because we don't have any visitors, and we are relying on them coming.
As I know, one of the questions, we'll get to a few questions that the audience have asked later on, but I know one of the questions was in the museum. It's obviously somebody who'd visited before, because he knew where the museum was, and he said he'd been there. Have you got a favourite item in the collection?
I was thinking about that. It's always people asking which is the favourite tank in the museum, and I would say depends, but if I would have to pick one, it would be the S tank, because it was developed in Sweden. It was designed for the Swedish doctrine, and it was made in Sweden. Everyone knows about it, and thanks to games like World of Tanks, etc., a lot of people out there, they are aware about this tank, and it's so unique. So I think that tank is Sweden in many aspects. So I would say it's the most important object that we have.
And I know there's another question, actually. If there was one, if I could wave a magic wand and give you any vehicle in the world, what would the desire be for the collection?
To add to the collection.
To add to the collection.
Most people would probably...
if you say Tiger One, I'm just going to turn this off now, Stefan.
I think most people would like me to say Tiger One, but I will not. What I would like at the moment is a modern tank to show... What do we have today? What is the present day, and what will become the future? We had a Leopard 2, a modern tank, until a few years ago, but the army decided we need to have it back, so they collected it. So in order not only to talk about the history, but also to be able to talk about the present day and to be able to understand how things are connected from the past to present and vice versa. I would say a modern tank, state of the art.
And what are the future plans for the museum? You mentioned something about sort of, you know, are you adding space or?
Yes, we are planning to do a bit more adding space, so we can have more of the storage vehicles that we have closer to the museum, and also be able to open up a bit more of that as sort of an open storage where you can actually see the vehicles even if they are not in that diorama thing. They might be on just a row of vehicles, but in order to do that, we could do more things on site with the vehicles. Now we have to transport them a couple of kilometers, and that's a big nightmare to have to do that every time we're going to do some changes. So it would be a lot easier to have more of it closer to the museum area.
And events, I know you used to run before all this happened, the events.
Yes.
are there plans for the future again?
We hope that we will be able to open up. This year, we will not have any events at all, no rides, nothing, because we realized we will not be able to take any risks. But we would like to keep on to do our events that we have had so far, and to be able to develop them more. I don't think that we will ever have events like Tankfest or so, because it's so big difference. But in a smaller scale, we can do events that will suit the public in Sweden and also be something for people to come from other places to visit. So we really hope that we'll be able to take that up again and to continue with that.
I'm just going to look quickly at a few questions here, make sure some of the audience, as always, we ask the audience for a few questions. I thought this was an interesting one, Stefan. Actually, I haven't told you this one, so if you don't want to answer it, just say you don't want to answer it. But somebody was quite interested about how the general opinion is of Sweden towards something like a tank museum. Now, obviously, we're a bit spoiled in the UK because we're very sort of like, you know, pro-army, the majority of people, not everybody, pro-army, you know, the designing, the history and everything goes back there. But I thought it was quite an interesting question, that how is the general regard towards something like this?
Well, it's an interesting question. The general interest for defense in Sweden is not that very big, since we have not been to war for more than 200 years. So we need to have an army, but most people, they really don't really care that much about it. It's something you need to have, but not that big issue. But we have realized that the interest for coming and visit and to look at these things are bigger than we expected. And a lot of people are very curious about this. And now, since about 10, 12 years back, we don't have the conscription system anymore. So now a lot of people, they don't have that natural connection to the army. So they are curious about what my father or my grandfather did, or what friends told me. But so they have a curiosity that's, I think it's bigger now than it was 20, 30 years ago. They're curious about, tell us more about this. What is it? So the interest is there, even if the support from above, from the government, could be a bit more. It's not something that's considered as culture. It's something else. Culture is that's art and paintings, dance, etc. But history, that's something. Well, it should be there, but don't spend any money on it.
It's interesting you say that, because I mean we work a lot, you know, of course, with Bomington, the Tank Museum, and they do come under that hat of, you know, government grants for culture and everything else. So yeah, I can only appreciate it must be. You know, I always think it's, I spoke to a lot of people over the last, you know, 12 months or so from the museums that we've worked with in the past, and everyone has had, you know, a hell of a time of it when you rely on people coming through the door to visit it. All I can say is that every time I've been to the Arsenalen, it's incredibly family orientated. I was always amazed at the amount of, you know, families that would visit it as well. And the children mm-hmm. love it as well, because, you know, let's face it, what child doesn't like seeing these lumbering beasts roaming around as well? but it is great. So all I can say is visit it. You've got to visit it. Some of the other questions, Stefan. Somebody did ask, I think we've asked the other questions on there, but what's the, in your regard, what's the best thing about running the museum and the worst thing? I think you've sort of answered it. I mean, I know you're very hands-on, and I imagine it's the paperwork side of it that you really don't like.
No, it's really not. But well, some you have to do it, and if you don't do it, then you can close down. Well, the best thing, it's hard to say. I realized I learn things every day. There is always something new that comes up. Small question whatsoever, and I realized, I haven't thought about that. That's interesting. Where could I find the answer? And nowhere. So it's always something new, and we are also trying to improve how to tell the audience about the stories that we have, about the vehicles that we have, how to do this in a way that they appreciate and they will understand. And I've realized through the years that it's a bit difficult to tell people who have never seen a tank, what is it? How why it's there? And the obvious answers that I find so obvious, well, I cannot use them onto ordinary people because they don't see it the way I do. Simple thing. Well, it's because of this and this. Yeah, but how does that comes in into place? Well, interesting. How to reply to all these questions? So it's a great challenge to be able to give them what they really want.
Have you found, I mean, I assume you have, the social media, the power of social media has grown dramatically over, I mean, even the last few years. Again, to all those listening, please do support the museum. You know, check out the video. The videos Stefan makes and his team are absolutely incredible. And a good sense of humor, Stefan. Do you script them yourselves?
There are not much script from the beginning. We have sort of a plan. Let's do this vehicle and then just fire away. I have checked the data, years, etc. So I know I won't mix things up. But maybe they are pretty much from my own mind.
I was thinking specifically about, was it Christmas that you released? There was this strange that you were dressed in like tights with a green hat or something, dressed as an elf. And
that was not my idea. That was not my idea.
I think that came from your ladies, I think, there, didn't it?
Yes. And they had some difficulties to persuade everyone to be part of that. But sometimes you have to give in okay, I will do that.
It was fantastic, Stefan. Everybody on sort of our side was all going, is that the director of the Tank Museum? I said, it is. What a great What a great thing for him to do. Stefan, I don't want to take up too much of your time. Thank you so much for sharing some of that information with us. To everybody listening out there, don't forget, of course, these museums are, it's been a terrible time for them, terrible time for everybody, but in particular for numbers going through. When are you reopening, Stefan? Fingers crossed. What's the situation?
The plan is to open in the beginning of May, and we hope that we will do a slow start during May and early June, and then we will open up more in during the summer. And we hope that it will work well, but you never know. And last year we had a boom with people coming through the door during the July, so it was a bit terrifying with too much people at the same time. When you have all these restrictions to take care of as well, so we hope for a quiet summer.
Do you have? I mean, very much like the UK, you're going to be restricted the amount of numbers you're allowed in because of COVID. And
yes, and now we just counted this week how many we are allowed to have in the entrance area. So we have to made a few changes just to be able to have people to pass through quicker. And within the museum, we also have a restriction how many people at the moment that we are allowed to keep on inside. And there are also restrictions on how many we have to, we are able to have on the outside. Yeah, so there are a lot of things to consider, and it's not so easy how to count the people that come through the door. Well, challenging.
Mm, yeah, of course. Well, that's really all we've got time for. Stefan, again, thank you so much. If you are there, you know, please do take a trip out to the museum when you get it. It is absolutely beautiful, fantastic. I love the surrounding countryside as well. For me, that's a big selling point. To our global audience, when we can actually travel again and get on a plane, please do take the time out, whilst you're on holiday in Sweden, perhaps, take a trip there. I will look up Arsenalen. I will give all the links and everything on our social media channel so you can check out Stefan dancing in his green tights from his Christmas video, which is well worth a look anyway. But please support these museums. And Stefan, once again, thank you so much. I really hope that, you know, in the near future that I can come over again and get to spend some time with you and the museum. So we want to wish you all the best and look after yourselves.
Thank you. And I really hope to meet you in person soon again.
And to all of you out there, thank you so much again for tuning in, listening to us. If you like the podcast, please don't forget to leave a review and subscribe to us. Until next time, take care.